The Institute.
Institute.
Institute for Justice.
The National Law Firm for Liberty.
Welcome to Deep Dive with the Institute for Justice. I'm Melanie Hildreth. In the week since our last episode, we've all been watching the unprecedented situation with COVID-19 play out. Of course, here at IJ, we're particularly interested in what's happening in the law. So with that in mind, I've gathered together some of our top legal minds. I have IJ's president and general counsel, Scott Bullock, and IJ's senior attorney, Bob McNamara, to talk about the latest legal developments. Bob, could you get us started by talking in general about what kinds of constitutional litigation we're seeing in response to COVID-19?
Sure. There's been a lot of litigation, as you might expect. A lot is going on and people are upset, though also, as you might expect, the courts are largely hesitant to wade into questions of how broad quarantine orders should be or how justified they are. For well over a century, U.S. courts have held that the government has broad discretion in how it's going to deal with infectious disease and with pandemics. And largely, that's what we've seen. We've seen some success of certain claims in trial courts. Most famously, there's been trial court rulings about restrictions on drive-in church meetings, based largely on state religious freedom statutes. And you've seen other trial court success in other areas involving fundamental rights, or what the courts have called fundamental rights, of the right to access abortion or the right to access firearms. So I think everyone listening probably dislikes at least one of those. But those claims have, again, seen success in the trial courts. Though what we're seeing in all of these cases is that when they get to an appellate court, the appellate court seems to say, let's slow down. Let's not weigh in here. Let's let the government play this out and see what happens. And maybe if you bring me a plaintiff that has a more egregious situation, maybe then we'll get involved. But we're going to let the broad strokes of this stay in place. So there have been some trial court orders. Some of those court orders haven't been appealed. Some of the religious liberty orders have not been appealed. There was just a trial court in Virginia that ruled that the governor's order shutting down indoor firing ranges was unconstitutional. That's probably not going to be appealed because the governor's order is going to expire before an appellate court could even read briefs about it. But things that actually do get up to the appellate courts where law can be made have found a very icy, icy reception.
Yeah, and that's, I think, true for most of the challenges that we've seen. And obviously, we are concerned about what government is doing here. We're obviously very sensitive to the health risks that the pandemic poses, but obviously this is a time where government is assuming a lot of power over the citizenry, and that always is a matter of concern for people who care passionately about individual liberty. But we do have to be really careful to the type of litigation that we launch, because I think Bob is absolutely right. Here, the court is going to give the benefit of the doubt to the government. There's been declared national emergencies and state emergencies. And so in those instances, judges are going to be very reluctant to second guess those determinations, at least for right now. And I think that's the key, is that judges are going to be pretty lenient when it comes to what the government is doing for the time being. And we have to be really careful about not rushing in to court. And I think everybody should be careful about not rushing into court too quickly on some of these matters, because what you run the risk of is entrenching bad precedent. And so you don't have a decision from 100 years ago granting government these broad powers. You have a decision from 2020. So that's something that we're monitoring very closely and making sure that we're being strategic in any challenge that we do to these very broad powers that the government's assuming.
Yeah, and that effect, I think, is really what you're seeing when appellate courts are deciding these things. Like the only court of last resort, the only highest court to decide one of these challenges so far, is the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, because the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has what's called King's Bench jurisdiction, which essentially, instead of having to wait for a case to come to them through the appellate process, they can announce, this is an important case and we're just going to take it. We're going to decide it right now. And they did that in a challenge to Pennsylvania's order, quarantine order, in a case brought by the named plaintiff is a group called Friends of Danny DeVito, which is actually a political committee that's designed to elect someone named Danny DeVito, though I like to think the plaintiff is really all of us. He's all of us are friends of Danny DeVito.
Indeed.
But the... So the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, which is a smart court, and which is a court that is actually very concerned usually with civil liberties, and it's one of the more hospitable places in the country to talk about civil rights and about the state constitution and about limits on government power, the majority rejected a whole suite of constitutional challenges to this order and said, no, the government has broad powers here. This is a pandemic. This is an emergency. And I think the striking thing about the Pennsylvania Supreme Court decision is the dissent. The Chief Justice of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court wrote a dissent, and the dissent said, I absolutely agree that this order is not unconstitutional and that the government can do this, but I'm worried that the majority opinion just sort of sweepingly says the government can do whatever it wants, and I'd like us to wait for more facts in other cases to see if there are arbitrary applications where we do have a role. And when you have a dispute on a court where the dissent is saying, this is absolutely okay, and I just want to leave the door open for a future challenge, and that's the losing position, that's a sign that this is not a fruitful area to make good law about the scope of the government's power, good law limiting the scope of the government's power.
Well, and that makes total sense, I mean, given what we're seeing in the cases that are actually going up. But what would you say, perhaps, to somebody who says, well, of course we have to bring it now because this is when things are happening. You know, if we don't perhaps put some limits in place, the government, the tendency is, of course, to get more power and perhaps not to relinquish it. And so maybe this is our only, you know, this is our best chance to stop things from going too far. How do you respond to somebody who's worried about that?
Well, I think the one of the things you're going to see happen, and I think it's going to be an encouraging trend, is that you're going to see the next generation of these lawsuits. If these orders are extended beyond the periods that are now already in place, and that's what some of the dissenting justices said in the Pennsylvania case, is that we should be looking at the facts here, and maybe in a future case, a little further down the line, we can start looking at facts on the ground. And so I think you're going to see challenges that might be more successful if these orders stay in place and several of the provisions of them don't really make any sense. And you have this kind of arbitrary distinction between essential and non-essential businesses, when really all business and all market activity is essential for people's lives and livelihoods. And so if you have a business owner that says, hey, listen, what I'm doing is really important. I'm employing a lot of people. And here are the steps that I'm taking to address the legitimate health and safety risks that are present here. I'm willing to do this. I'm able to do this. Here's my plan for doing so. And so therefore, I should not arbitrarily be denied the opportunity to reopen my business. And I think in those instances, if these orders are extended for the next several months, you're going to see judges take a more serious look at this and look at the evidence and say, this distinction really doesn't make any sense, and these range of businesses or these activities should be permitted, and courts are going to be more comfortable challenging the broad authority that government has and in a public health situation like this.
So if challenges to stay-at-home orders or executive orders limiting certain kinds of business activity, not where we should be going now with strategic litigation. Are there areas of the law that are more amenable to strategic lawsuits that are helpful to people right now, as in this kind of crazy time as everybody's trying to both be safe and also provide for themselves?
Definitely. And we are pursuing litigation across all of our pillar areas. And a lot of our cases that are even ones not directly related to the pandemic are proceeding, and that we have responsibilities in them and clients that we want to represent and need to represent. But we're also targeting a lot of areas that really need the work of IJ. And that's breaking down barriers to opportunity, especially in the medical field. And so we filed two lawsuits last week challenging certificate of need laws. These are these ridiculous laws that exist really to protect large healthcare providers from competition. People want to provide a medical service and they have to apply to do so. And then the competitors, which are typically large hospital chains or other large players in the medical field, get to intervene in the proceedings and veto the ability of folks to provide these services. So they were outrageous before the pandemic. They are they're indefensible at this point. And so we think this is really a ripe time for judges to take a really close look at this and for these lawsuits to proceed, and hopefully we'll get some very favorable results. The other thing that we're doing on the medical side is looking at doing another case challenging these restrictions that exist in six states on physician dispensing of medication. We have a case in Texas right now that that is challenging that. There's other states that prohibit this, which makes absolutely no sense, again, in a normal set of circumstances, but now with concerns about going to pharmacies and people having access to prescription drugs, you want to make it as easy as possible for patients to work with doctors to be able to get the medicines that they need. We're also doing something as well. We have litigation right now that's challenging barriers the government's set up to private alternatives that people are creating to feed the less fortunate and to help those who are really in need. And that's something that's been, I think, really inspiring that you've seen throughout the country, are people looking for ways to help. And so we have a case right now in Eastern Washington that we just filed a couple weeks ago that is kind of a spinoff of the little free libraries that exist in many places. And these are little food pantries that people have created where people can leave food or take food. And it's typically in somebody's backyard. And we have a woman out there who was doing this, people that were taking advantage of this. And yet the Department of Health has shut it down, not for really public health and safety concerns. She was willing to work with them on any concern about that, but saying, well, you're not a licensed food pantry. In order to do this, you have to be a food pantry. So therefore, you have to organize as a nonprofit, and you have to meet all these incredibly strict rules that we have for food pantries. And this is just, again, this government cutting off what is a private alternative that people are providing without any sort of justification. So we've challenged that, and hopefully we'll get that struck down. And the last thing that I'll mention too that we're doing on the litigation front as well is that we've sent a letter to the governor of Michigan challenging the extent of her order there that also made the distinction between essential and non-essential businesses. And she had shut down gardening centers where people were able to buy plants and other things to provide for their families. And this is something you want to be encouraging people to do at this time, and to shut those down, declare it non-essential while letting like liquor stores and other places open is just something even at this early point makes absolutely no sense. So we sent a letter, what we call litigation by letterhead, saying you got to change this or you may face the consequences. And then just on Friday of last week, the governor changed that order and said, yep, we're going to allow these home gardening places to open up, and so people can go there and be able to work on their own land and grow their own food.
The thing I like about all of these cases is they're thrown into starker relief by the pandemic, but the claims aren't about the pandemic. They're about the constitutional principles that IJ has been trying to vindicate for years. Because the thing kind of that I keep coming back to and thinking about litigation in this area is that strategic litigation takes a long time. Like most courts don't have King's Bench jurisdiction, right? Like you have to actually spend years to get a case up to a court that can make a decision that sets precedent. And so the question in strategic litigation is, the case you're filing today is what you want to be fighting about 3 years from now when it gets to a high court that can make a difference. And you know, I'm not sure in 3 years we want to be fighting about the pandemic and about the special powers government may or may not have in the context of a pandemic, if there isn't a pandemic anymore, if that's not the core constitutional question of the moment. The core constitutional question of the moment is going to be these questions of self-determination and entrepreneurialism and access to medical care that we have been litigating about and are going to be litigating about in 3 years, kind of regardless of what happens with this particular pandemic.
Well, and Scott's point about the litigation by letterhead and being able to do some of this by writing directly to government officials seems to get to that question of timeliness, because if you're looking 3 years down the road, not just in terms of the issues you want to be talking about, but just courts take a long time. So the being able to just speak directly to the powers that be and say, look, this doesn't make any sense. Even right now, it's clear that this is irrational. I mean, is that something that IJ is doing in other instances beyond the Garden Center example?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, our primary business is always going to be strategic litigation and trying to get high courts to say important things about important principles of law. But there are also things you can do today, and we're doing as many of those things as we can. We've identified a lot of regulations that we think are thrown again into stark relief by the pandemic, and we've sent letters to a number of states urging them to rethink the scope of practice restrictions they place on nurse practitioners who are highly trained medical professionals, but who in a lot of states are not actually allowed to do anything unless they're being directly supervised by a physician, when the point of all of that training is actually to allow them to provide healthcare services directly. We're similarly sending letters to states that have medical certificate of need laws that we have not yet challenged, urging them to roll those back. We have teamed up with outside groups to fight for the rights of food trucks to provide food at truck stops. Long-haul truckers are vitally important at this time in history, and food trucks are sort of the original social distancing food preparation tool. A guy in a food truck is social distancing. He doesn't have any tables, and he can provide you with a hot meal, but frequently they're being barred from the truck stops, where truckers who don't want to go into a truck stop, don't want to have this close in-person interaction with someone who's inside, really need a food truck. And so we're looking
And many states have shut down their rest centers too. And so this is the only alternative oftentimes that the truckers have is a food truck.
Absolutely. And so somebody has to feed these guys. You know, they're not just going to drive from California to Maine with a bag of jerky.
Well, and we need them to feed us.
Exactly.
So.
And so there are, we think, plain obvious solutions that just happen to coincide with our litigation expertise. And we're looking for those, and we're pushing those everywhere we can. Though actually I think my favorite thing we're doing that is sort of not a 3-year project, but is a what can we do in the midst of the pandemic project, is our shop in place websites, which is an idea that came out of the clinic we run at the University of Chicago. It's the Clinic on Entrepreneurship, which represents a lot of small entrepreneurs, and realized that essentially the pandemic has changed how everyone does business, and no one knows what businesses in their neighborhood are still open. Who's doing curbside delivery? Who's doing home delivery? Who has switched to providing their services by the phone? What can I still buy that isn't just sort of buying something from a big box store on the internet? And so they launched Shop in Place Chicago, which is an online tool we designed that lets businesses flag themselves and say, hey, I'm still open. This is what I'm doing. If you want to shop in your neighborhood, this is how you can do it. And then allows consumers who want to support local small business to go to that website and find this stuff out. So they launched that in Chicago. We followed up with Shop in Place DC, providing the same service here. And kind of as with all projects like this, it's designed to be modular. You know, we're not going to be able to launch 10,000 of these, but it's a design that you can pick up and make Shop in Place wherever you are to sort of provide tools for these small businesses to actually survive, actually have some revenue. And I had nothing to do with this, so I'm not bragging. I'm just so proud of the kind of thinking that went into that, setting aside sort of the long strategic goals and just thinking about what can we do within our mission to help people now. And I've been so pleased with the reception of those websites, with their success, and with what they're doing to keep people afloat who need customers right now more than they need a 3-year strategic lawsuit right now. And I'm just so proud that we've been able to help provide that.
And people have been contacting us saying, I'd like to do this in my area. What can I do? And we've been providing templates for them to set it up in their cities. And it's something that I say I've been incredibly encouraged by is just the staff at IJ that has just stepped up during these really challenging times to not only have our lawsuits proceed and do all the work that we typically do, but to come up with these creative and innovative ways to challenge government abuses, and then also to provide opportunities for the people that really need it, to assist our clients who are really struggling right now, not only with their battles with the government, but just to survive. And so it's been a real testament to the type of people that we have here and the commitment that they have to the work that we do.
No, and it's been, I think, just a wonderful expression to see. I mean, there's a lot of pressure in the midst of kind of daily news, like the daily news we're reading, where everyone seems to be thinking on a scale of the next 10, 20, 30 days. And while we've managed to do things that are going to help in the next 10, 20, 30 days, our overarching strategic mission really requires us to think about the next 10, 20, 30 years. And being able to keep our eye on both of those balls at the same time has been difficult, but it's been gratifying to see people actually able to do that and able to do that so seamlessly.
Scott, any concluding thoughts as we sort of look ahead to what we expect to see coming to the courts from IJ and others in the coming months?
Well, we have a lot of activity right now, a number of petitions before the U.S. Supreme Court. We're awaiting the decision on educational choice in our Espinoza case. That's going to be decided by the end of June. We have a number of cases that we've already launched and are keeping at. And then we also are looking for these opportunities that are presented now by the situation we all find ourselves in. During all this, we're going to be guided by the principles that we had at our founding, which is to defend essential liberties that allow people to control their destinies and to challenge abuses of power. And so that's what we're going to stay focused on and push along our mission.
Well, thank you both for your thoughts, and thank you for joining us for this deep dive into IJ's work. If you'd like to see other episodes and hear our conversations about other things related to the pandemic or the law more generally, you can find more episodes on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. If there's an area of IJ's work that you're more interested in learning more about, you can email me at melanie@ij.org, and we may feature it in an upcoming show.